All right. Episode 17 of the Educated Guest Podcast. We're coming with you today. I got a family friend educator. She's just going to go by the name of Maggie today, all right? I got two audiences that I want to reach. The San Diego Unified School District and all the problems they're going through. And my people from San Diego State that have gone through the teacher education program, all right? But first, I want to let you listen to this break because it's funky, all right? One. Here it comes. And there it is. All right, so I got to run that disclaimer. As the USD, SUHSD. Yeah, we straighten it out. The disclaimer is like this. So the opinions contained herein are myself and my guests. In no way, shape, or form do they reflect upon our employers or the associations that we work for. So this is going to go in two parts today. We're going to talk about her legacy as an educator because she's been through a lot. She's served all of the students of San Diego Unified. And then we're going to talk about the juice, about what's going on with all of the RIF notices where they're laying off teachers and just eliminating departments in San Diego Unified. Here it comes, episode 17. Educated Guest Podcast. Episode 17 of the Educated Guest Podcast. I am here with a longtime family friend and a very well-experienced, well-rounded educator. Please introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Maggie Margarita, better known as Maggie.
Mm-hmm. And how many, let's just... Tell me how many sites you've worked at, first of all, and how many years.
Wow, it's been 36 years, almost 37.
Okay.
And
I mean, sites, not the exact, but just give me a ballpark.
Many, we're talking.
10, 12.
No, maybe 8.
Maybe 8 sites.
8 sites.
Doing different things. You've been in the classroom, you've been out of the classroom.
Back in the classroom, out of the classroom. So I've kind of gone in and out. So, you know, 5 years as a classroom teacher, then as a lab teacher with technology back in the day, with the technology now that started it all.
Mm-hmm.
And then back in the classroom, and then...
Primarily a elementary school teacher.
Yeah, all elementary.
Okay, mm-hmm. So then back in the days, we're talking about in the 80s, when the Apples first came out, and then they kind of sponsored San Diego Unified or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
All the schools got the Apples, and you worked in one of those labs, right?
And we created computer labs for the kids to learn how to use technology.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, this was all brand new technology.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I remember being in the fifth grade at Grant Elementary, and we had the computer lab there, and it was just a whole different world. Mm-hmm. I think they were making like a little turtle move or something like that. And then
we used... the kids were programming, and they would program this little turtle to go around, and so it was basic programming.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we also did have, you know, connections with UCSD, and UCSD had a really cool writing project.
Okay.
And they created software so kids could write and use a kind of word processor.
Oh, wow.
To write.
Okay, I think I may have been around for that, maybe, right? When you would say print and then put in quotes.
Mm-hmm,
and I kind of briefly remember that. At any rate, so you've done the computer lab. What other kind of things have you done for the district?
So I've also been a resource teacher for the magnet office.
Mm-hmm.
We wrote grants to that were meant to integrate schools and create opportunities for kids to move to other schools so that they could integrate.
Mm-hmm.
And so we created magnet programs at different schools, north of 8, south of 8, to attract kids north of 8 and south of 8.
So like, for instance, when I was in high school, maybe junior high, we noticed that all the kids from, let me think here, all the kids that were in a neighborhood called Market, right, a barrio, they would all get bused to like Point Loma High School.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, is that the kind of magnet stuff you're talking about?
Exactly. It was all part of a court order.
Okay.
The district was ordered to integrate the schools without forced busing.
What do you mean by that?
So, if kids were in a school that was, you know, predominantly what we called then minority, mm-hmm. The court order said, do not force these kids on a bus to go and integrate. Create opportunities so they'll want to get on a bus and leave Barrio Logan. Mm-hmm. Create opportunities in Barrio Logan for kids north of 8 to want to go get on a bus north of 8 and come south.
Which probably didn't happen very often.
Not too often. but you know what? It happened a little bit for kids that were in programs that were like seminar gate programs.
Okay.
Those opportunities, because they didn't provide all of those opportunities north of 8 necessarily all the schools.
Okay.
So that was the effort to integrate voluntarily. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it worked. It didn't work.
It probably worked a little more than it didn't work.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You created some opportunities for some kids to get out of their neighborhood, mm-hmm. to meet other types of kids,
yeah,
so
exactly.
to speak. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then what else? And then you've also done what for the district?
And I worked in what we call intern program. So I worked for the BECA program when we needed bilingual teachers and, you know, we couldn't get them fast enough from the college. Mm-hmm. So we created a bilingual intern program to get teachers to come straight out of college, mm-hmm. and put them in a classroom with just like, I don't know, what do you call it, boot camp, teacher boot camp.
Uh-huh.
And we did that for, you know, like all summer long. And then they got a classroom with a intern salary. And then took 2 years to give them their credential classes and their methodology and all of that. But we had support providers. We were all support providers to work with them in the classroom.
That's kind of scary. I bring that up. I bring that up because so basically you're taking a kid that just graduated from college that mm-hmm. wants to become a teacher, and mm-hmm. you're putting them in the classroom rather quickly.
Very quickly.
But you are trying to give them the support because mm-hmm. you know that they need a ton of it.
Right.
And it was aimed at bilingual teachers, you said.
Right, uh-huh.
I think I remember that.
Yeah.
Okay. Nowadays, they're working on something where they're trying to make it just a lot quicker for them to get their credential. So you basically would go 2 years at a JC and then 2 years at state, and you would get your BCLAD.
Nice.
And an undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you stuck with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my guests on my earlier episode was talking about that. Okay, at any rate, let's get back to you. So all the years of experience, you're doing all this stuff for the district. What's your current job right now?
So I'm currently an English learner support teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And these last 2 years, I've been assigned an area of the district. Mm-hmm. And we work in teams. And we provide services, support for mostly teachers. So we're not in one particular school,
mm-hmm.
and so we're coaching teachers, we're coaching parents to be sort of leaders, but not like we used to where we were building relationships at schools. We used to be just in a school.
Okay.
And now we're kind of in an area.
Okay.
And it's different. It's very different, and I'm not sure that it's completely providing the services we've been providing, mm-hmm. and the support for teachers, parents, and students.
Okay.
So this year, more coaching teachers to be able to feel confident that they're providing the support their students need as English learners in the class.
Well, at least it's a shot, you know what I mean? At least they're trying to do something. Because we know that population is not progressing as fast as we would like them to, right?
Right.
So in our district, we, you know, probably the same thing over in San Diego Unified. We've classified them in like four tiers because some of them have taken longer to learn, mm-hmm. a lot longer to learn English mm-hmm. than others. So, mm-hmm. But that's good. We're not currently providing support to our teachers like that. Especially not our parents,
mm-hmm.
and that's a big misstep. We should be providing some kind of support for the parents so that these kids don't stay stuck in these classes for a long time.
Right.
You know, I don't know. So I think sometimes in the high school, I think some of the kids like it just because they see the same kids every period. So mm-hmm. there's like, you know, a friendship there. It mm-hmm. can be fun, I guess, at times. I don't know. But you've been doing that for how long? couple years, few years?
Well, working in an area like this where I'm going to different schools, mm-hmm. only 2 years. Mm-hmm. Before that, about 10 years at two schools only and doing kind of the support, but more focused on student support and parent support and not as much in teacher support.
Okay.
So okay. more like direct services.
Okay. All that, right.
That's what I would call it, direct services.
All right. So one thing that I did forget to do with you, we're going to take it back here. We're going to go way back. You are local to San Diego, right?
For the most part.
For the most part. Why? Yeah. Do you consider where you're from as separate from San Diego?
A little bit, because my elementary school years, I was in Orange County, and the family moved here when I was in middle school.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought you were born and raised and bred in National City.
I came to National City when I was eighth grader.
Oh, okay. So then back then, was it Granger or National City
I
Middle?
I went to National City Middle and uh-huh. then Sweetwater.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And did you always know that you wanted to be an educator?
No, I didn't. I wasn't even going to go to college.
Well, back then, they didn't really tell us.
No.
They didn't tell you that you could go to college.
No. Nobody told me. And it was because I had a young, energetic high school counselor that came to Sweetwater
uh-huh.
and decided she was going to, like, do her job.
That's funny because, like, almost all the people I interviewed, it's something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, if they say, I didn't know I was going to college, but there was always that one person that came along and said, you can do this. Mm-hmm. So who's the counselor?
So Maria Elena Ochoa, and she is married to Dr. Alberto Ochoa.
Okay, big name drop right there, right? Dr. Alberto Ochoa is in the teacher education program at San Diego State, and he is, he's a pillar. He's a pillar of that educational community there. So it was his wife mm-hmm. That encouraged you to go to college.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she came. I think they moved here. Like, there was this wave of educators that came from New Mexico and Texas during the 70s. Mm-hmm. And if I remember correctly, I don't know the exact story, but it was something like that. And they're new in the community. Uh-huh. And she shows up at Sweetwater. I think it was like her first or second year. And she decides, and I learned this story later in life. I just know that I was the kid who got called into the counseling office, and I was like, I wonder why I'm here, because I never used to go in there unless I was in trouble. and she says, yeah, it looks like you have a B average. What college are you applying to? And I'm like, I already have it all lined up. I'm going to this little technical. There used to be some plants downtown that built little transistors for technology back in the day, and I was already lined up. I was going to go. This is my senior year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Something that is probably going to be obsolete in about a decade or so.
Exactly. Right? I already had friends that had already, you know, dropped out of school, and they were stringing rackets at the local, you know, racket stringing company and whatever. And so
you're dropping some heavy stuff right now.
Yeah, that's what we did. That's what we did.
So you're having me want to take this a little bit into a different space here. So then what was education like at Sweetwater High School when you went? I mean, how was it there? Was it a positive experience? Was it just, I mean, was it a negative experience?
No, it was a positive experience. The school, Sweetwater used to be, National City used to be mostly white
mm-hmm.
and Filipino, with Latinos sort of starting to move in.
Okay.
So in the 70s, there was a lot of consciousness raising, you know. Everybody's just realizing, there's stuff going on.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I mean, I was in school there when they had the very first Chicano studies class. Ralph Inzunza taught Chicano studies for, like, it must have only been the second semester he had taught it. And a bunch of us started taking his class and realizing, hey, we need to get involved. We need to wake up. And so that was, you know, and then she calls me in and says, hey, I see you have a B average, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I'm, yeah, no, I'm not going to college. I have no intention of it.
I got this job over here waiting for me.
Yeah. And then she says, oh, no, I need, no, you could do this. And then, so I had several conversations with her.
Okay.
And she encouraged me. She encouraged me. She helped me fill out paperwork. You know, my parents couldn't help me.
Yeah.
And I got in. And then it just so happens that National City has this little hub of activists and people who are involved.
Uh-huh.
And my best friend's brother-in-law, George Baca, worked in the financial aid office at San Diego State.
Okay.
And him and two other guys ran the EOP. I don't know.
It wasn't
Gonzalo.
Gonzalo Rojas.
Gus Chavez. And Jimmy Nieto was kind of like, he was in there as the additional helper work, you know.
Uh-huh.
But they worked with EOP. They helped kids get financial aid. And they were like this little hub that was making things happen. And I just happened to apply at the right time. And I got in.
That's
and boy,
crazy.
Was I surprised.
That's amazing that those that those names would still be at San Diego State when I got there, still doing the same thing, still keeping the movement alive, still helping kids get money to go to school and getting some services.
Yeah.
Both Gonzalo and Gus.
They were there when you were there?
We're still there
in
the
90s.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
So shout out to the counselors, because we don't get a whole lot of guests on the Educated Guest podcast that say it was a counselor. And we know they do good work. Right, but it's rarely a counselor that that gets shouted out here on the show. That's really really awesome.
She changed lives. She really did.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break, and I'm gonna say this: she is name dropping some big names from San Diego State. If you went there in the 90s, or if you've been a part of the teacher education program there, then you know the names that she speaks of. Peace to all those people, all right? If anybody from the San Diego Unified School District wants to get interviewed, I am open. Just hit me up. Again, that's Caesar Does It on the Twitters. And we're going to get back in this interview, and we're going to talk a little bit more about how she is as an educator. She is positive. She's powerful. And we're going to get into the juice after the next break. Listen up.
Now, another reason why I wanted to interview you is that in my 18 years as a teacher, you know, I don't know if teaching has gotten tougher. I don't think the kids have changed. I mean, a little bit. The technology has changed. But my point is this. I hear a lot of people talking about how tough the job is. You know, the happy hours get real fun on Fridays. I've never, ever, ever heard you talk bad about a student or complain about your job. It really seems like you enjoy what you do.
I love my work. I love my work. I love my students. The teachers I work with, they're all hardworking people. All of them. I mean, there's a sprinkling and again. Everybody knows that.
I understand,
right?
Yes.
Everybody has one or two in every place where I go.
You have to say it.
But for the most part, and I want to say a majority, hardworking people who care, who love the kids, love the work, and respect parents for being there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're not always the same kind of involvement, but they're there. And if you can just figure them out, they'll be on your side.
Okay, okay.
Because we all want the same thing, you know.
We do. Sometimes it gets tough. You said, you know, there's just that small percentage of apples that were like, man, we really wish you could pick it up, because then we'd be doing awesome, even more awesome. But so then does it become hard for you to answer a question like, say, if I asked you, was there a site or was there a program that you enjoyed working at more than the others? Was there a place where there was really some innovative going on, somewhere that you enjoyed even more so being at every day? Like, man, this we got this right
over
here.
Well, you know what? When I was at Perkins, I was there for 10 years, and that's like in the heart of the body. That's right under the Coronado Bridge. It was a small school, a big school. Now it's a K-8 school.
Uh-huh.
It's changed a lot. But I think it's all about the dynamics of people working together. Mm-hmm. And we had an awesome team of people there. And I think we did a lot of amazing, amazing things there for our kids. Mm-hmm. And I still have my own kids went to school at Perkins K-5.
Really?
So I worked there and my kids went to school there.
Okay.
So they, you know, develop friendships and relationships that they still see those, not see the kids, but, you know, now with Facebook and all of these ways, the ways that people are connected. Mm-hmm. And that school really had, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was the staff, the families were, it was just everything at the right time. There were certain things, like race relations had a program called Turning Point, where teachers really learned how to, you know, turn things around in the classroom and take, what did they say? They had a little slogan, bring out the gene. No, that's what our current superintendent says. But we had a slightly different version of that, bringing out the giftedness in kids.
I see.
And it was a focus on that.
Okay.
And we had, you know, an amazing amount of kids that tested out gifted, tested out, you know. I mean, all kids are gifted, but these particular ways to determine whether these kids are gifted, we had like a bumper crop for the, you know, 10 years that I was there.
Wow.
And it was just pretty amazing.
So were you testing them for gait in a different manner than how you normally test for gait?
No, we tested them the same across the district, mm-hmm. but it was the kind of work teachers were doing in the classroom.
Okay.
You know, all right. And somehow that was, the program was called Turning Point, and it was.
Okay. Well, that's important because, as we know, as we've all read, students of color are often overlooked when it comes to gait classification, right? Because, I don't know, it probably works the same in San Diego Unified. In our district, they'll slip a little paper in your box, you know, hey, we think Johnny might be gait. Could you fill out this information about Johnny? Mm-hmm. And often the way that we score these things or the way that we perceive our students, sometimes when these, you know, kids of color get overlooked for gait. Right. So it's important that you're broadening the scope or somehow pushing kids up so that giftedness can come out of them or shine at least on that test.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Because, even though we don't want to, sometimes labels, I mean, they can hurt, but a lot of times they can also help.
Yeah.
And you get this gait label, and all of a sudden your group of friends are a little bit different, and
your classes might be a little bit more engaging. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, they were. As soon as I started going to gifted programs, the teachers were a little bit more engaging, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm probably generalizing a little too much there, but I felt like the classes had more to offer me. Okay. All right, shout out to Perkins Elementary. Where else was I going with this, with you? It's all right, I can edit all that crap out.
Oh, okay.
I had the next one coming, and then I just lost it. Oh, all right. So let's get to a whole different matter entirely. We're going to lead ourselves into the juice here, okay? Mm-hmm. Through your experience, through your years with San Diego Unified, you've already been through one strike. You've been through you've been through the big one, which was in 97, I want to say.
Yeah.
I was a TA at Euclid Elementary, and I remember the teachers, almost all of them, if not all of the teachers, going on strike and marching outside of the school. And I remember my teacher telling me, like, hey, look, don't worry about me. You don't have to strike because this isn't your contract. Mm-hmm. I need you in here to take care of the kids. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so you went through that.
Yeah.
And it was probably pretty ugly back then. I don't know I know how districts get. Mm-hmm. In order for it to become a strike, first of all, there has to be a big disagreement that just goes on for months. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, sometimes the district paints the teachers in one way. Mm-hmm. Do you remember those times?
Yeah, I do. I think first economically, of course, there were issues with, you know, budget. But on top of all of that, there were issues with, you know, safety in schools. You know, there were, not that long ago, we had to fight for a telephone in the classroom. A telephone.
Right.
Are you kidding me? We shouldn't have to fight for something like that. That's a safety issue. Correct. The only way we could contact the office was to punch the squawk box.
The squawk box?
Yeah.
Oh, I think some of those are still around.
Really?
Yeah, I think some of those are still in classrooms.
Yeah, you know, it's an intercom, and that's the only way to get to the office. And so it was that type of negotiations. We were trying to create some respect for teachers.
Okay.
It was about respect. You know, we need more. We need more respect from administration, and we need the respect to come in these forms. You know,
I know when it comes down to a strike, the public tends to see it as only being about
the rate
raises and benefits. Mm-hmm. So you're saying that it was about more. It's about getting language in the contract that either, you know, protected students or gave teachers some kind of say.
Yeah.
In the goings-ons of the business.
Exactly. Right. It was about safety. It was about respect. It was about having, you know, a prep. For elementary school teachers, you know. It was about having decision-making committees so that it's not all top-down.
So it's like creating an FAC or something on campus?
Yeah, creating a principal's advisory group.
Okay.
We didn't have that.
Okay, no say.
No say at all.
Uh-huh.
And so it was about creating this opportunity for teachers to have a say in the work that happens at the level of the classroom.
Okay.
And I think that's why we have school site council. That's why we have principals advisory groups and, you know, those type of, you know, instructional leadership team. That didn't exist. Not mandatory anyway. Not obligatory that it needs to be in existence at a school and it needs to be serious and taken into consideration when decisions are made.
And it's not like the district was just going to up and give us those committees, right?
No,
teachers had
of course
to.
Not.
Teachers had to fight for those, obviously.
And that's what that strike was about. It was about more about respect and getting our voice in the mix.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm sure it was tough to deal with, though, right?
It was.
Because teachers were out for, like, I don't know, like 7 to 10 days or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was 6 days, six full days. And it was heart-wrenching.
Uh-huh.
It was a very difficult time because you want to be together on it, but you don't want to be militant, right? You don't want to make people do things that they're not comfortable with. Mm. But at the same time, if you're not together, if you're not really committed and motivated, it's not going to happen.
You have no power.
You have no power.
Yeah.
You have no power. And for some people, you know, unions are scary.
Striking is scary. I mean, let's just be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a family.
Right.
You're, like, scared to strike. I mean.
Exactly.
You're going to be missing some money there.
Right. And there were, you know, hurt feelings.
For people that didn't strike.
That
crossed the line.
And that was really hard.
And I'm sure, some friendships were damaged.
There was a lot of damage there that some people still don't talk to each other because of it.
Damn.
Which is crazy.
That's deep.
I know. Yeah,
so,
it was hard.
All right, we'll be right back on the Educated Guest Podcast. This is episode 17. I need to remind you to check out the Facebook page for the Educated Guest Podcast. That's where I put most of the information. You can check me out on Twitter. That's Caesar Does It on Twitter, CZAREFF. I'm by the same name on Instagram too, but that's a little bit less podcast related. So check me out on the Facebook page for all the updates. On the next episode, we're going to get into a bunch of stuff, but a couple of things we're going to do. We're going to talk about my visit to City Hall, where I talk about that politician over there out at the Otay Water District, the Big H. I went to City Council and talked a little bit about that. And then we're also going to get into our visit to Palm Springs. Rodrigo and I went out to the Boost Conference, which is the best of out-of-school time that's after school, right? We got interviewed the night we got in by Bruno Marchese. He's got a YouTube channel called The Well, W-E-L. That's the World of Expanded Learning. Props out to him for posting that up. Check him out. That's The Well, W-E-L. We're going to get back into this interview now. Peace.
So currently the district is embroiled in a really, really big mishap. They're looking at a shortfall. You can look all this stuff up on the paper, all my listeners, all 21 of you, however many are out there. So the district is currently in a shortfall of like, I don't know, I think it's over 100. It might be like
125.
I mean, that just doesn't happen by accident.
No.
Right? So they didn't, you know.
Yeah, how does that happen?
Okay, so that's kind of where I'm going with this.
Right.
Do you have any idea how that happens?
Well, I think, and this might be unpopular, but I think when a leader takes over an organization, you have to look at the state of the organization.
Uh-huh.
And you need to, in my opinion, our leader should have looked immediately at what our budget situation was and started to remedy the situation immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Not wait and get in a bigger hole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've been, as a district, we've been dipping into our reserves, which, you know, there's a law that says, I don't know how many millions of dollars have to be in reserves.
Okay.
And we've been dipping into it. I understand, you know, we had to do that during the economic slowdown.
Mm-hmm.
We had to. We all made concessions. We took furloughs. It was big.
Uh-huh.
But to take over an organization, have a budget deficit and not do something about it immediately is asking for trouble. And I don't understand how that can happen. Yes, okay, we kind of blame charter schools because they're taking some of our students and we lose ADA.
Mm-hmm.
And our communities are changing, granted. Some of our schools are operating with 220 kids. But it's hard to close schools in communities because people want their schools in their communities.
Okay.
And our administration has made a promise, there will be a school in your community.
Oh, wow.
And I understand that.
Okay. Or you support that?
I would, because it's important.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we need to be fiscally responsible. And if this particular school needs to be closed so we can close a gap, then we need to make hard choices.
Yeah, tough decision.
Right? Tough decisions. You don't keep getting in the hole.
Uh-huh.
I think we've been working on getting in this hole for 4 years, and that's how long our leader has been our leader. And I don't think that should happen. And I'm just a lowly teacher, but nonetheless.
Forgive me.
You know, it just doesn't seem right.
Well, the things that you're all talking about seem like problems that can be anticipated kind of easily.
Yeah.
You know, to be $120 million in the hole seems like a really huge, huge error. So I know your leader that you're referring to, Ms. Dream Big, Be Kind, or Be Kind, Dream Big, and the board, they have to make some tough decisions out there. I mean, I don't know how you remedy this. People, so where it's at now is, and where we're going with this, is people are losing their jobs.
Right.
Some people are going to get pink slipped. Are they not?
They already did. And they're making a decision about how many of those pink slips to recall right after this week. Because they'll be counting up all of the people that are retiring.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll be able to make that determination. If they sent out 1,700 pink slips, I think, something mm-hmm. like that, they're probably going to recall most of them.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, having that pink slip changes how people feel, and it changes how the dynamics of the school.
Mm-hmm.
People feel disrespected. Are you not valuing my work enough to be more pragmatic? Why do you send out 1,700 pink slips when you know you're going to call them back?
Right, right.
I have been in this district long enough to see history repeat itself repeatedly.
Mm.
This is not the first time we send out pink slips.
No, no, no.
And this is not the first time we recall more than half of them.
I mean, but that's kind of standard district operating though, right?
So but why? It makes no sense.
I mean, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But I guess it's because they don't have an exact number at the time, right? Like you said, there's people that retire early. So they always send out more of those pink slips than they should, and they end up recalling them. I remember them doing that, during the recession. Mm-hmm. They did that at our district. I remember there being like I don't know, somewhere about 15 to 20 people at just my site that got pink slip. You know, I remember seeing a coworker crying.
Yeah.
Just like morale gets low.
Yeah, exactly. People feel, like I said, disrespected because, you know, we need to feel our work is valued, the work we do every day. And when somebody gives you a pink slip, that makes you feel as an employee that maybe the work I do doesn't matter.
Okay. Okay. So then let's talk about what specifically happened to you. Did you get a pink slip?
I didn't get a pink slip. I got an excess letter.
An excess letter.
Right.
Okay. Explain for the listeners.
So an excess letter means that your position, the job you're doing now, will no longer be the job you do next year.
Okay. Okay.
And okay, I get it. If we all need to cut back, then a department of, say, 38, because, you know, we have a lot of English learners. What, 27% of our population in San Diego Unified are English learners.
Okay.
And the Office of Language Acquisition, which is the department of the second language of English learner division, we have a lot of services to provide, right?
Right. Okay. So it takes a lot of people to do that.
So we're a big department, probably the biggest. So let's say we're 38. We all need to cut back because of whatever has happened up to now. So it makes a lot of sense. Let's cut our department in half, and let's do more with less, right?
Yeah, with a lot less.
If that's what we need to do.
Right.
But no, this administration decides, well, this is my opinion here. Maybe we should clean house a little bit, and since we need to cut back, let's just excess everybody. Uh-huh. Everybody is gone. Let's redesign, reimagine the department so that we provide better services, and then we'll have people reapply for their jobs if they still want to be here.
Okay.
And still provide that service. So, you know.
So your department of 38 is going to whittle down to how many?
To maybe 20.
To 20.
Probably 20.
Okay.
Out on the field, because they also have to have some people at the Ed Center, and I understand that. We need support at the Ed Center as well.
Okay.
And so that's where we're at, where I'm at. So if I want to continue to do the support that I'm doing now, I need to reapply for my job.
Okay.
Go through the interview and all of that.
What do you think about that? I mean, where are you at with this?
I still can't believe it.
Uh-huh.
Because I feel like the department should have had more foresight and figure out that creating this sense of have I been doing a good job or not doing a good job? Should I reapply to this position or not reapply to this position? And it kind of makes me think, what is really their intent? Is it really to
reimagine?
Reimagine?
It's to reimagine smaller is what it is.
Yeah, right? Reimagine smaller.
Reimagine it with less people.
That's what it is. And it's not just in the Office of Language Acquisition. It's happening to special ed, to technology. The technology team, currently 12 resource teachers working with, you know, 125,000 students, 6,000 teachers, is going to be cut back to 6.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
So they're going to do more with less. We're all going to do more with less. I understand that. But this business of just telling everybody, instead of just doing following protocol or union, you know, union business, which is going by seniority.
That's right. There's a point system. Yeah. Every union has a different point system.
And
but they're kind of the same. They're similar, right? So instead of doing that, they're saying, no, no, no. All of you are going to not have the same job next year, but you can reapply for the job.
Yeah. And that doesn't make any sense.
Okay. And so that's why the teachers union decided to file a class action grievance, right?
That's correct.
Because they're breaking the contract by not using seniority to determine who gets fired.
And in addition to that, creating a new position without bargaining that position.
Ah, that's right. That's right.
Because they're just creating a new job, which is fine, but let's all be part of it.
Let's all be a part of the tough decision.
Right. The tough decision to say, okay, this is the kind of work we've been doing. Mm-hmm. Now we have to do it with less people. So let's redesign and reimagine the work so that we're more powerful together.
How about letting the people in that department reimagine that department, right?
That is innovative.
I'm sure everybody in there, like yourself, knows that the tough decisions need to happen.
Yeah.
At least let you all be a part of that decision.
Exactly.
So that's what the class action agreements is about. Wow.
And we had sort of rushed. They were the district and the union talked about it, and they rushed through step one and two, which normally takes, you know, a few months. Mm-hmm. And we had sort of like a, not a hearing, but just an opportunity to talk about the kind of work that we're doing now and why we feel that this grievance is valid.
Yeah.
And the district came back and said, no, actually, you don't really know what your job description is, because we haven't really had an opportunity to review it. So that's why we're going to just start from scratch. So now we're going to take it to arbitration. But in the meantime, we all need to figure out what we're going to do next year. Because there's nothing worse than not knowing where you're going to be and what you're going to be doing.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So most of us are either going to reapply for the position and hope that we get picked up, or some people like me are going to look at other schools and see what other opportunities are out there.
You're of course, willing to go back into the classroom?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
That's big. So I'm sure that the union, like you said, they're moving fast. They're, you know, these grievances have different levels before they get to arbitration. So I'm sure that they are trying to escalate it as fast as possible.
Right, right.
Wow. So how often do you hear from the union?
So the union has been sending us out emails. You know, every time that there's a juncture where there's a decision that needs to be made, they send us an email and they tell us, this is where we're at right now. Mm-hmm. We're gathering evidence. We're going to have a meeting next week and gather up more evidence. Mm-hmm. We need to prove that the work they are expecting us to do next year is very much like the work we've been doing. And that's a burden of proof on the union.
Yeah.
You know, because the district is, they're moving forward with their plan.
Right, right.
Because their plan is going to save money and provide better services, right? Better support. In the meantime, they're spending a lot of money because all of the layoff teachers had to sit in hearings for 3 days with subs and plead their cases as, you know, teachers. So they all had to go to the Ed Center auditorium and sit there and plead their cases one by one.
Wow.
For all the people with layoff notices.
Wow.
My department alone had to create new job descriptions, reimagine the position, post it, review all of our applications for those that are reapplying. Now they're going to have to hold interviews. Think of the hours that are spent on that. Mm-hmm.
And so,
a lot of time.
You had mentioned other departments that were getting cut big time. You mentioned SPED.
Technology.
Technology. So they are they all a part of the grievance too?
Yes. It's just youth in transition. They're all a part of the grievance because they were all.
They were all reimagined smaller.
Yes. We all were reimagined smaller.
They were all released into the wild and then told, you can come back if you want to.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Exactly.
Wow, that's terrible.
Youth in Transition, Special Ed, Office of Language Acquisition. There were people there from the other department that I think is totally wiped out, Race Relations. There were 2 or 3 people from their department. Mm-hmm. They're already a very small department. I think they're going to be zero now.
They're like 3 or 6 people or something like that. One of the people that I interviewed, I think episode 10, Macedonio Arteaga, is part of Race Relations.
Right.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that this has all happened to you.
Right, right.
Wow. So the end is not in sight, is it?
No, because they'll find out how many retirements are going through, mm-hmm. and then they'll recall the layoff notices.
Okay.
All of those departments that have, and schools that have teachers that have been accessed. Not only did we have to access department resource teachers out of classroom, but we had to access at every school because mm-hmm. we had to increase class size for the primary grades. We were down 22 to 1 K-3. Now we're going to be back up to the what the state considers class size reduction, which is 24 to 1.
Okay.
So all of our schools, most of them south of 8, are losing teachers. So we have to access teachers because now we're going to have slightly higher numbers in K-3.
Yeah, this stuff all trickles down.
And
ultimately, somebody ends up losing their job completely.
Completely. There will be people. All the probe ones, I hate to say this out loud, but all the probe ones are gone. They're going to have to find other places.
Pobrecitos.
I know. That's really hard.
I know.
Because they just got started.
Yeah.
What are we doing to our new teachers?
Yeah, really vulnerable people.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Good
point.
Instead of providing a place for new teachers to feel valued and to say, oh, I did the right thing.
Yeah.
I did the right thing. I went into teaching, even though people were telling me, no, don't do it. There's too much of this. And, you know, it's all of the things that steer people away from education.
Mm-hmm.
We're still doing it.
Yeah, this is part of it, right? The big bureaucracy that is the district, when they make a big mistake like this, it affects
a lot
of people. It's a huge mistake.
It is. It's big. Classified employees are getting hours cut. They're going to work less days in the school year. I just, you know, read that in our one of the proposals that they sent out. So they're cutting back hours for classified employees. People who work with our most vulnerable populations, our special ed kids, our kids on the bus.
I already feel like special ed kids don't get the services that they need. Yeah. I already feel like our teachers are spread too thin. So in your district, there's going to be less of those teachers, right? They're probably going to raise the class sizes in those rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And then so some of those teachers will lose their jobs.
Right.
Is that
that's exactly what's happening. They're creating what they call special ed hubs. So, for instance, in the area where I work in City Heights mostly.
Uh-huh.
City Heights and Normal Heights. So they're taking these special ed classrooms or teachers that have special ed students, because we mainstream most of our kids and then they go into the mod severe students that are, you know.
They have a
self-contained class for parts of the day, and the rest of the day they're out with our regular ed classes.
Even the mod severe?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they'll spend an hour in the morning, an hour in the afternoon, and then they're mainstreamed.
Okay.
Even our kids on wheelchairs and whatever. But now they're going to create these special ed hubs. And so now the students that are, let's say, around this particular school will not be able to go to that school. They'll have to choose one hub that is going to service, say, four schools.
Oh, my gosh.
And so now, of course, they're going to need less teachers because now they're putting classes together in one school. So, like, they're taking away the mod severe class at one school, at another school, and then creating a hub of special ed in let's say, a third school.
Mm.
Well, of course, right there, you know that there's going to be bigger classes. They're going to need more.
Wow.
More of everything.
So the light at the end of the tunnel is not showing itself. I hope one day that San Diego Unified can get out of this hole and things can get back to the way they were. We know it will. We just don't know how long it'll take with a mistake this huge.
That's huge.
Right? I mean, we know that things will stabilize somehow, but I mean, it's going to be quite a few years.
It's going to be a while. That's a big deficit.
Damn.
And to try to close it in a big way in 1 year,
mm-hmm.
instead of, you know, 3 years ago starting, 4 years ago starting every year, maybe not reimagine new departments and put in executive directors where we could do without, mm-hmm. at least until we get out of our budget mm-hmm. crisis.
Wow. I don't know how to end a podcast like this. It's not like I say, well, good luck. I mean, that's just a terrible ending, right?
I know. I know. I think we all just need to, we all need to focus on what we're here to do. We're here for our students. And we're here to make sure that everybody gets a similar chance. Mm. A similar chance at life. That's what it's about.
And as you mentioned before, those poor Probe 1s and maybe even some of those poor Probe 2s, I wish you guys the best. I would look at other districts. I know there's other districts that are hiring. And, you know, some of you, those of you who don't have families yet, I mean, look at other states. I know there's – I've seen billboards of Arizona and Nevada making big pushes for teachers. But anyways, this is one of my more sad podcasts. Yeah. I knew it was going to kind of go here. But it was important to get your insight because I know that you've been to the meetings, the union meetings, and I know that you've been in the district and you've for a while, and you've been here before in the tough spot with the district before. Wow. Yeah. I hate to be on either end, but I really hate to be one of those teachers that's just not going to come back, period.
I just want to – I would love to have a conversation and say, don't give up. It's going to be okay. It's all worth it. You know, don't give up on education. Don't look at it as a sign. Look at it as a sign for you to be stronger and stay with what you believe in.
Oh, I like that, right? Always make sure that your teachers have some kind of say in the business of the district, right? Exactly. If you have a board or a superintendent that is favorable to those ideas, then you're really, really lucky if you can get, you know, some of those committees together, right? The district and teacher committees that actually like make decisions so that hopefully things like this don't happen, you know, ever. Anyways,
it shouldn't happen.
Okay. All right. Educated Guest Podcast, episode 17. It's been a tough one. I want to thank you. We're going to leave your last name out of it just like you did in the beginning. Miss Maggie, thank you so much for your insight and sharing a little bit of your history and knowledge with us.
It's been a pleasure.
All right.
All right. We're going to end this one the same way as we started this with this funky break. Straighten it out. You know how we do it. All right. Educated Guest Podcast. Please check us out on the Facebook page by the same name. On the Twitters, that's Caesar Does It, a.k.a. C-Z-A-R-E-F-F. It's been an awesome episode. If anybody else from the San Diego Unified School District wants to get interviewed, please let me know. And we're taking it out like that. Thank you, everybody. Hope of the world is in our generations. It's all left up to us to change this present situation. Our leaders make us fight. We don't know what for. If they want people killed, let them fight the war. It's gotta end somewhere. This killing's gotta cease. If no one went to fight, we could all live in peace. Our generation is all left up to us. Our generation, let's do just what we must. We'll be right back.